This interview is with Mrs. Irma Bridgewater, once director of the Frederick Douglass Center. Mrs. Bridgewater was born here in Champaign in 1913. This interview is being conducted on July 26, 1983, at the home of Mrs. Bridgewater, 608 East Washington, Champaign. The interviewers are Melinda Roundtree and Patrick Tyler, representing the Urbana Free Library Archives Department.
First of all, Mrs. Bridgewater, could you tell us a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up?
I was born here in Champaign, and my father was born here. That part of it, I wish I knew more about his having been born here, because I'd like to go back to it now and find out why he and the family came to Champaign, because that was quite old. He was born in 1892 or 3, I think. So it would be interesting to me now to know something about the family, you know, why they came here. But I was born here in 1913. My mother came from Shawneetown, and we lived on, first I was born in a house in North part of Champaign on Tremont Street. And then the family moved to the south part of town on the other side of the track, which really didn't mean anything because there was a poor neighborhood out there too. You know, the other side of the track doesn't always mean that you it wasn't built up at all. And I think at that time, my mom and dad, we got the house for $1,500. It took them a long time to pay for it, but that wasn't much at that time. And I had a brother, and we lived there. I lived there till after I married. It was a predominantly white neighborhood. There were two or three other black families, but they were poor. In fact, people that lived down on the corner from us still had pigs and chickens in the yard, and they were, well, what you call four white tracks. At least that's what we called them then. We went to neighborhood schools, and the closest school for us was about 7 or 8 blocks from the house. And I guess I was pretty well treated there because there were, up to a point, there were some people there who had children from who were college, you know, professors and so on. And their children always seemed to treat us a little nicer than the poor ones. I guess we were a threat to the poor folks, but not to them. And we played games. One of the things I remember is we played a game called Break the Chinese Wall. And they had to hold hands, you know, and some of them wouldn't want to hold hands. And the teacher would come then and take my hand. And teachers do kind of look out for you, I guess. And they'd break through the wall or, you know, break through. Then sometimes when they'd choose sides, I'd be left out. And the teacher would see to it that I got in. Being the only, my brother and I were the only blacks in there for a while. Then there were one or two others later on. And you get in that kind of situation, you learn to do what you will, take your place. That's all there is to say about it. Then we did have some teachers that were pretty good. I remember one thing that happened to me, I guess I'll never forget, and that is we had music appreciation. And it was classical music, and you had to learn the part of who the composer was, and you know the whole story of the suite. And I got oh, I like music, anyhow. So I got a perfect score, enough to go to the regional. They gave me my paper back and said I wouldn't be able to go to the state because I'd put an extra hump on an M. And that was the only thing they could find wrong with. You know, got everything right. But that was their way of keeping me from going on to the state. Well, nowadays, you know, you'd probably say a whole lot about that. But at that time, you just accepted it and went on. You didn't feel too good about it, but you accepted it. Some other things that happened that were, I remember when I was a kid coming home from school one day, there were men working on the streets. And one of them said, it looks like it's going to rain, there's a cloud coming over. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. And I went home and my parents said, oh, you just don't pay any attention to him. Of course, they knew what he was talking about. And did well. I remember another girl called me nigger. And I jumped on her and got whipped. That's the only fight I ever had in my life. Because she was bigger than I was, for one thing. But, I think, all in all, it was probably a good experience. I think, probably, as I look back on it now, my education was probably better than it would have been maybe at some other school. Because with the mix of children, white children there, they had to do a good job of it. Then there were, it was just better. And I remember much years later when my niece came to live with us, and she was going to go to school there. They told us she couldn't go, she'd have to come back on this side of town. And we were still living out there, and they were going to have to bring her to this side of town to go to school. Well, by that time, I was old enough to have a little spirit, too. So we told them that it just wouldn't happen that way. She'd have to go to school there, and they let her go. When I got into high school, there was a swimming pool there, but blacks weren't allowed to swim. And my parents and some of the other parents went to the principal and told them that they wanted us to have swimming. A lot of times when you look, young people today think that, you know, people didn't do anything about things like that years ago, but they fought just as hard. They probably didn't have as many people with them, but they still fought. So they went to them and demanded that we be allowed to swim. But what they did was let us swim after everybody else was out. You know, all the white kids had their day, and we were able to swim. Well, that was bad, except we did get swimming. And the same kind of thing happened when my kids were going to school. My daughter, I wanted to get her into dancing, ballet. And they told us that they didn't have, you know, they didn't mix the classes. So I got her into a special class after school. Well, it wasn't very long before it was integrated. But you have to, somewhere along the line, you have to do things like that and stick your neck out in order to get them to realize that you're just like anybody else and you can go ahead and do those things. I've talked quite a bit at this point.
I have a couple questions.
Okay.
What was the name of the street that you live on, Southside?
Ells, Ells. It's built up quite a bit now.
And could you give us the names of the schools that you attended?
I went to Lincoln School. It's now been made into an apartment building. And it's near the Edison Junior High. The high school I went to was Edison, what is now Edison Junior High, which is on Green Street. And Lincoln is on Hill.
What year did you graduate?
1931. Yeah, 31. That's right. to finish college in 37.
You went to college at U of
I? Uh-huh.
What did you major?
Sociology. They didn't have school of social work then, so I got a degree in sociology.
What was the first job that you had?
You mean after I finished school?
Yeah.
Because I did maid work and all that other stuff to do, you know, day work and all that. My first job when I finished the University of Illinois was at Newman Hall as a maid. But that was all I could find out there. And my mother was working there at the same time. And I stayed there for about a year. Of course, at the time, I was still looking for something else. I never did want to leave Champaign. I was determined to find something here. And I worked there for, I think it was a little over a year. And I was still looking. And the recreation department, well, it wasn't the department, but they had what they called WPA then. And they had recreation in Douglas Park. In fact, they had it in a house. And they changed from WPA, and the city took it over. And I went there then as one employee. I was the only employee from the city working with people who were still on WPA. They'd been working there, you know, several years. And you can imagine what kind of a reception I got, because I was living down there on, I mean from my own people, living down on the other side of, you know, on L's, on the other side of the tracks, coming up here with a college degree, which not too many people had at that time, and to work as director over people who'd been there and knew what they were doing, and I didn't know a thing about recreation, and just got it, you know, because of those qualifications. So I had a real hard time. They sent me home crying, said a lot of times. Not only trying to get along with the staff, but trying to get along with the people that are kids and so on I was working with. And it was gradual, but I finally made it. What I learned was that I had to swallow that degree. And I did a good job of swallowing it too, because I just forgot that I ever had it and went on from there. And I think that has been a big help to me, really. It sounds silly. Sometimes now I have to remind myself that I did go through school and I did have some problems going through with, getting money to go and so on. But, of course, I'll never regret having gone, but there were some problems.
At the university, how was the housing like?
In those times, students lived in the community. There wasn't any place for them to live on campus. So they lived in the community, and there was no place to eat on campus, so they usually boarded wherever they stayed. And it meant that they were a big part of the community. You know, you didn't have the difference you have now. They came to our churches. They were really just in with us, in the social life and everything. There were some fraternities and sororities, the AKs and Kappas, Alphas, Omegas. And it gave an opportunity for a lot of the people for income, you know, teaching students, washing for them, and so on. That part was good. Now, and then it changed, of course, when they got the dormitories on campus, and they stayed on campus, and they didn't come to churches for much of anything else. And then it was sort of revived again with the Culture Center. When they started having a black chorus, you know, and they involved people. And there were a lot of programs at the university where people were from the community were involved in, and that's, I guess, has stuck some, but then it seems that they seem to be getting apart again. I don't know. Or at least it may be that I'm just not involved, and that could be it.
Some other people we talked to, like Mrs. Brightwood, we asked her about the community, like the offering the women, how they were sitting.
Yeah. You sit in the back, upstairs, in the balcony. At the park theater, the worst seats were down in front, right under the picture, so that's where we sat. Yeah. The Orpheum was two or three rows in the back, and we were, which you wonder sometimes why you did it, but then we did. And students were a big help in changing that to Swedish University, NAACP testing, and you know, but we had to sit in those places. And gradually it just changed. It was gradually.
Can you tell us a little bit about your work at that center?
Yeah, I was there two or three different times, because I started in 39 and as director, and like I told you, I didn't know what I was doing, but then I learned. And we organized through the years. I've worked there, I think, about 10 years, then I got married, and I went back after the first child was born, and then I worked a while, and then I decided to come home and raise the three children, and then went back in 55, and things were so different then. The kids were different, and they were doing different things. But we had drill teams, drum corps, a lot of clubs, a lot of club activities. We had track teams that we took from the city to the regional to the state, and some of them have records that probably still stand, at girls and boys. And that was a great time, and it was a great time for me in more than one way, because I was able to have my own children there, and I could work, you know, and have them there after school. And then I knew what things were going on when they started wearing these tight Levi's, you know. Had I been at home and not known what other kids were wearing, I might have said, no, you know, they're ugly looking things. But it was so much nicer that way, because I knew, in fact, I learned the latest dances up there and then came home and taught them to them. So it was a grand experience, and I had, I really enjoyed working there. In fact, I felt real bad when I left. And the reason I left was they decided that, well, I vacillated from assistant director to director, and at the time I left, I had been director. They decided they needed a man director, which was all right with me. I didn't mind that. And then they decided that they were going to reduce my salary two or three steps in order to pay him. And I worked there for a while, and I said, "Geez, this is crazy." You know, I found out I was doing my work and his too, and being his secretary and everything, and even still telling the kids what to do and what not to do. So I left, and then I went to look at, I was 50 then, and at that age looking for a job was kind of hard to find. So I went then to finally went to the Courier as a proofreader, and I stayed there until the Urban Renewal came along, and I worked there for 3 years. And I went to Francis Nelson Health Center. The Urban Renewal Project was completed. I stayed at Francis Nelson until Community Development came along in 75, and I worked until I retired.
But, Mr. Stratton was part of that, like, the urban youth.
Yeah, he was one of the ones that wanted it. And it took him a long time to live it down, too, the fact that he was for it. Well, one of the reasons I was able to do that job, I think, is because I saw people being moved from even basement apartments and real bad housing into some decent housing. And I felt that it was an opportunity to help people to live better. And it was, and it, that part of it, from that point of view, it did work. Now, the only thing that bothered me with the next program, the community development, is having cleared that whole bit of land up there. Nothing has happened with it since, and that really bugs me to death, because I went in there with telling people that it was going to be cleared and was going to be rebuilt. And now I'm beginning to wonder if the city didn't have some other reasons for doing it, and I'm still not sure about it. I don't know.
What year did you meet Dr. Smith?
The last, that was in 64, I think it was, 63 or 64.
Yeah, because I was reading some articles that they had at the library from the Courier, late article, and it said, I read some about the drill teams that they had at Douglas Center, and it seemed like the community was involved in helping them raise money to go. I think it was to Washington or something.
Yeah, they did. They went to Elks Convention and they made their own costumes, their own uniforms, and so on. And we taught sewing. And they were a nice bunch of kids, which they always are when you look back at it. You can get all the nasty things they do.
What was the difference between the youth back then and the youth today?
My feeling is that, I felt I could talk to them. Now, I could be saying that now, and maybe I wouldn't be right, because if I knew them better, I could talk to them now. But I remember grabbing a knife out of a kid's hand. I wouldn't think of doing that now. But I think I learned the things they did wrong was probably drinking. Now, I could deal with that, but I don't think I could deal with drugs. I think that's the difference in that it would be for me in the kids then and now. They're much more, they have a lack of respect. The youngsters that I saw, even the worst ones, would at least respect me. But then I don't think I could see that today. And of course you have to build up respect. So maybe if I was around them more, I could, you know, build it. But I would be reluctant to go back to where I'm at, go back there now. I just don't see them being that way. And maybe I'm not being fair. I don't know.
I was wondering, now the churches, they've been supportive for people like, you know, Dr. Young and what happened here, they're raising money to help him with his legal fees. Did they do those kind of things, you know, in the past, you know, help with education or, you know,
well,
families, poor families?
One of the things I do remember is the job thing, I think, where the picketing was for jobs, you know, Penny's store was about to open downtown, and all the churches really got together then, and we were together, and picketed Penny's because they weren't going to hire any blacks. And it was a perfect opportunity because the store was new, and there was, you know, it was just perfect for doing it then, and it paid off. They did hire some of them. I don't know. I think there was, it was easier then to get people together We worry about leadership nowadays, and I don't think we had a common cause then. And I guess Dr. Young would be a common cause, but you have more distractions from that sort of thing now than we had then. That was a little more, it involved more people. You know, it involved opening up something, and this involved a particular person. Of course, there's a prince there, too, in the Dr. Young thing. I don't know. I don't know whether you could see. There were things done back then for more of a general reason. You know, we didn't have this, so then you have to pick it or work to get this, and not for any particular person.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about, okay, the 60s, you know, during the civil rights movement, how did it affect the life in Champaign County?
It affected me. It was a grand time for me. It's like, to me, I always think of it as having all black things on your back, and finally you stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, I don't have to carry all that. But it meant me going with a natural, for one thing. My daughter came home from, she went to Howard. She came back with a natural. And she said, all three of them asked me why I didn't try it. I said, oh, I don't know what people would say. So I went to the hairdresser one morning. And when I drove up there, I said, oh, this is the wrong day. And I already had my hair washed. It's the wrong day. I said, okay, that's it. From here on, it's just going to be like this. So I did get a lot of flack from a lot of people, but it didn't bother me enough. But the 60s were a liberation time for me, because having grown up with all these different things about you can't do this, you can't go that place, and the freedoms to me came in little bits and pieces, you know, to say, well, here now, I can talk to that person just like I want to talk to them, whereas before I'd have to, you know, get my words together. And I could use broken English if I wanted to. And it was, to me, it was a great time. Even the ride. And it's a rebellion.
How has the civil rights movement helped Champaign-Urbana?
Well, I think we've gotten people into some different kinds of jobs and better jobs. I don't think we've changed the minds of whites so much. I think they're much more subtle with what they do. But I think those things have come along. We see people in jobs that we would have never thought we'd see them in.
Do you think it brought the community closer?
I'm not sure. Because as some people step up, they step away, you know. They you know, I got it, you know, and you get it. That kind of attitude that sometimes happens. You don't find very many people that say, come on with me. You know.
Was there a lot, for blacks after that, you know, like going into political offices?
Running for office and succeeding. I think probably now we'll always have a black on the council, I think. Because a lot of that would be up to us, too, whether or not we vote one in or make sure. And, of course, in order to get on, they more or less have to have votes from the whole community anyway.
I was wondering if you said you knew Blanche Harris, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was her and her husband.
And her newspaper.
Right. Uh-huh. Do you remember the newspaper?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You remember what kind of things they had in it?
Yeah.
They
had... Some of them, of course, were picked from the regular newspapers, but what they did was pick the black news from the other papers. They weren't the kind that would get into issues, you know, like to influence people like maybe the later newspaper did, the one that Clarence Davidson had. He might be more apt to get into issues, but of course they have to be careful in order to make sure that other people buy their.
Did you happen to keep any?
Only kept one picture out of mine, and that was a picture of my husband and son and I. No, I don't think I have any yet newspapers.
Do you remember any kind of newspaper that you know, last minute had anything, pamphlets or anything?
What used to be called the Plain Truth. I'm sure you heard of that. Roy Williams and John Lee Johnson. They would be interesting to talk to because they deal with a different, well, John Lee, of course, has run for council and so on, but Roy hasn't. He's been an agitator pretty well along the way, but agitating for blacks and for the underdog and so on. He would be interesting to talk, if he would talk, but he might not.
I want to know about your marriage. What year did you get married?
We married in 1941, and we ran off and got married. Because my husband is a quiet type person who I was afraid he wouldn't. But I got him. He was from Tuscola. We've been married 42 years, married 1941. Yeah. And he's a nice guy. Must be if we've been together 42 years. But it's been a very nice marriage. I look at some of the things that people are saying nowadays about marriage and I really appreciate my own. I think I was making a little bit more money than he was when we married, but I had just finished a course in marriage at the university. It was the first year it was taught, and one of the things I learned there was that some of the problems that couples have early is in money. So we put our money together, and we paid the bills, and whatever's left was what we had to spend. And we first lived with my parents until the oldest child was born, or until after he was born. And then Cecil went off, my husband went off to the Army, or to the Navy. And I went back to work. I was able to work while he was gone. Came back in 45 in the Navy. And I quit work again then. To have the rest of the family. And I later on, in about 55, I think it was, I went back to work again. And these women that talk about you can't run a house and work too, I think are wrong. I'm not saying that's the way it should be. It's possible. And it takes, well, I know it's possible. Black women have been doing it all for ages. And still take care of the family. But like I said, I did have a break because after school the kids could come up there to Douglas Center. And in that, they got involved in the band and in the drill team and all those things. And were even square dancing. And we had to have it. But my husband didn't object to me working. Why would he? I was making I went back to work for one reason, was to help do some repairs on the house, and then just kept it up. But we've been very supportive of each other. He worked at the university and was in working furniture repair and upholstery. And he retired. He had a stroke and retired. So now we're both retired. But all in all, it's, marriage has been nice.
I love wanting to keep joining the organization, remembering the past or now.
Yeah, I was just in college. I was an AKA, and then I've been on a few boards, Urban League and Community War Chest. Well, it was the United Fund. Then, of course, I've been active in church all my life, and remember any other? Oh, the Francis Nelson Board.
What church do you go to?
Bethel and
I was just wondering about doing the depression thing. How was life there in Champaign?
It was kind of bad. I guess I don't remember a whole lot about it because I don't want to. But I remember we didn't have food stamps, but we had that was during the war. The other kind of stamps to get meat and so on. But when you're, on the low end of the ladder, you're poor, you're just a little bit poorer doing it. And black people have learned to work with it because you just find ways to cope with it, I guess. Where with some rich people, having been knocked clear down like that, it upset them. But it just meant that I remember times when, during that time, when I was making cornbread with no baking powder and a little bit of anything else in it, but it was cornbread and we ate it. So we did have some rough times. My dad worked at the university. He was mail carrier. But he started out as an errand boy and it worked it up to, he was there 30 years, so it worked up to where there's a whole mail service now with several employees, but it started out with just two of them.
Well, did your husband come to something like
that? Well, he lived in Tuscola, which isn't too far, so we were back and forth and we knew each other long before we got married. But he came up here, I guess, to live in the 30s. Still in school.
I like to know, how do you feel about a black running for president? You know, about
Jesse Jackson
and another candidate.
I don't understand well enough to understand, what would happen if he does run. If he's running would mean Ronald Reagan would stay in, or would change things. I don't quite understand that. But if that meant it, I say no, don't do it, because we can't have him anymore. We've had enough of him already. But the general idea of a black running for president, I think, is fine. The chances of winning, of course, are probably not too good. I would like to have seen Shirley Chisholm do better when she ran than she did. I think Jackson might have some problems. I think Andy Young could probably do it better than Jackson could. That's just my feeling, because I think he's broader. And that's not to say anything against Jackson. I think in his role where he is, he's doing great. the kind of vocal that we need, and I love to hear the way he talks, so he puts things together. But I doubt that he would go very far. And he's as smart as the one we got, that's for sure. I would like to see a shopping center up in here, up there in that area that's been cleared off, along with some housing. And they keep telling us that it wouldn't go. It couldn't make it. And I see them building them all over the city, even over there across from Kmart. They got one. They got another one going up out here on Kirby, right by another one. And I don't know why it is that they feel like we couldn't have one up here. There are enough, well, like beauty shops and barber shops and places that would sell the things that we as black folk need or want that would draw people, I think, from all over town. And then they wouldn't have these little sections in Kmart and the rest of the places where you buy black goods. Why not have it all up here? And I think it's going to be difficult to get it done because we're not together enough to go ahead and find the money to do it ourselves. We're not going to put the money in it to do it. That's one of the main things I'd love to see. And we do have a neighborhood group that's working on it. But when you have to work at it, work on your job all day, and then work on these ideas later on, it doesn't always come through. That's the main thing. That's the main thing I'd like to see for shopping.
Could you give us the name of your father? The name of the church.
My father was Raymond Scott. My mother was Sarah Wilson Scott. She's still living. She's 91. My children are Cecil, who's the oldest. Ronnie, who's the middle. And Cassandra Woolfolk, who's the youngest. Cecil's 42. Or will be 42. And I just saw, he's in Europe right now with Max Roach. Just saw Ronnie this weekend. He's playing with Lena Horne's show. Cassandra is a counselor with mental health center. And I have two grandchildren. Tulani, who lives with her mother, she's in California. And I've got three, I forget. Cecil adopted one. That's Cecil's, Tulani's daughter, father. And he adopted a child lately, Chelsea. My daughter has a son, Scott.
Is that Cecil Jr.?
Well, it's Cecil Vernon. His dad is Cecil Vernon. We didn't want him to be Jr., so he changed the middle name.
Well, I don't have any more questions. I just like to thank you. I appreciate
your cooperation. It's kind of fun sometimes. Dredging it all up again.